The Bright Side Home Theater Podcast is a spoiler podcast. The opinions and reviews are solely those of the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Bright Side Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds, I'm DJ, and this is the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast, where I take a look at what I do in the theater. I typically don't talk about the equipment, I talk about what I watch with my equipment. And this week, I've got a doozy. I've been really excited to talk about this. I went through this disc top to bottom, really excited to get to it. But before we get to that, talk a little bit about what I was doing in my theater for the week. So this week I went to put on Nessun and it wasn't working on my streaming service. I stream Fubo. A buddy of mine earlier in the week had told me he's using YouTube TV. So everything's free. So if you want to try it out. So I figured I'd sign up and try it out. And that ran into a test because I got Nessun for the day through YouTube TV. And it was fine. So I started testing back and forth, and the sound quality on YouTube TV was pretty good, comparable to Fubo TV, but the picture quality isn't as good. I'd say it's not even close, because even my wife noticed the difference. I watched it on different TVs, and I think to most people it's not really discernible, but if you have a home theater, you probably have a pretty good eye for this stuff, and you would notice a difference. So then I did a little research and looking into YouTube TV, and said they don't have 4K of any kind. They're not streaming any content in 4K. Fubo is kind of the leader in 4K. So maybe that's the reason that their content seems to look a little bit better. Maybe they are streaming it at a better rate. I don't know. I'm not getting into the nitty gritty. I'm just going by what I see on, you know, on the bright side of the screen. But I did like the YouTube interface a lot better than the Fubo interface. It has some really cool features. You jump to a TV show and you can rewind it all the way to the beginning, which was really cool. So like, even if you're watching, say you get home from work and there's a movie on that you wanted to see, and you go to the channel, but it's an hour into the movie, you can just, no matter when you turn it on, you can back it up right to it. I thought that was a really cool feature. Same goes for a sporting event. You know, if I put the Bruins game on and I could have backed up to that if I wanted to. But the picture quality and, well, my wife not wanting to change because it didn't have a couple of the channels that she needs to have. So we're staying with Fubo for now. But picture quality is much better on Fubo over YouTube TV. That's enough to make me happy. Sound quality, pretty much the same. They both pretty much in stereo. There's not really, I don't think they do a 5.1 on either of those streaming services. But that's fine for me for my TV content. Another home theater note this week, my wife and I started watching Lock and Key on Netflix. The sound in that, really, really good. Picture was really good. The sound was really good. And it really brings something to the show. It's kind of a kids horror type show. And the sound, the way things were working, it was scaring my wife. It was really bringing a real sense of like a horror ambience. Jump scenes, sounds moving around the room. Because in the show, the keys talk to the kid. And they talk in whispers, and the way the sounds move around the room and the whispers move around the room was really cool. It was creeping my wife out. It was pretty cool. There were noises coming from behind that she didn't like, and she was getting like she put her hood up and everything. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool use of sound. We haven't finished the show yet, so I don't know how good the show is entirely, but it is entertaining in a home theater aspect for sound, definitely. All right, let's get to Midway, directed by Roland Emmerich, who did Independence Day, Godzilla, The Day After Tomorrow, The Patriot, White House Down, 2012, Stargate, and Universal Soldier, which I talked about a while ago, a couple months ago. So with that list, clearly Roland Emmerich knows how to shoot a big scale movie. And this movie is big. It is huge. This movie needs to be watched on a big screen. It needs to have good surround sound. In my opinion, if you have a 65-inch TV, scoot yourself up to that nice and close and get that like 45-degree angle like at a movie theater and really just get absorbed into this movie. The picture in this movie is mostly CGI because this stuff doesn't exist anymore. The aircraft carriers don't exist anymore. These planes, you can't do this. So it's all CGI. And I think it looks fantastic. I loved it. I was sucked into this movie from the beginning. I'll say a little something about the overall picture before we get into scenes and stuff that I really enjoyed. But the overall picture I thought was really good. This 4K picture, the darks, the lights, the colors, their yellow life vests against the what seemed to be like a blue tone to the movie because they're out on the ocean for most of it, which really makes that yellow pop. I thought that looked really good. The scenes in Hawaii, the green grass, everything, that really popped. The relatively black and white scenes of when they were in Japan and it was snowy, that really, the contrast of all these different scenes, I thought really, really helps show off this movie, which is presented in the 2:39:1 ratio. And having that wide look, that wide screen, there's a bunch of scenes in here that up, you know, in the planes, it just the scope of this movie and what it took. There were times it was overwhelming. This is one of those movies that I would say almost the entire movie, just put it on and it's a demo disc. I really, really enjoyed this movie from a home theater aspect from beginning to end. And the storytelling too, because this is all based on real events. And if you're listening to the commentary, he really tried to do a faithful job at recreating everything to what actually happened. And the sound on this movie, the Atmos mix, like I said, reference quality, the low frequency effects channel, definitely getting a workout in this movie. The explosions, that there were actually times that I was thinking, well, maybe they could have done a little bit more with some of the big guns. So there's a lot of battle scenes where the big guns on the ships are firing up at the planes. And I was thinking, well, maybe you could have had a little bit more pop out of each of those shots because that's going to be loud. But then as I'm thinking that, the whole room is vibrating. The whole room, there's sounds from above. There's sounds all around you. There's bass from everywhere. And the low frequency, it's like rumbling the room. And I was like, well, that's why if you just focused on that one shot, it would seem louder. There's so much going on in every scene and it is really, really clear. It's an amazing job that how fun that can be, but it's overwhelming how all the sounds around the room are just bombarding you, which is what is happening too in some of these scenes that I'll get into. The pilots are being bombarded with these shots and then you're getting that feeling, and that they did such a good job with this Atmos mix of really bombarding you is probably the best way to put it. So this movie is called Midway, but it starts at Pearl Harbor. So Pearl Harbor takes place. You get to see that and their view of it. It's a really quick battle. Their representation takes probably 2 minutes, but it's setting the stage for this entire movie, but it's a pretty good battle. You get to see the Japanese planes come in, and it's your first exposure to how he's going to shoot a battle in this movie. And it is really good. But I would say for scenes in this movie, it's the dive scenes. Until this movie, I have never experienced dive bombing the way they showed you the way that Roland Emmerich brought you into that cockpit and basically scares the crap out of you. What those guys did, it's amazing. And he gets into it in the audio commentary as well. And he's amazed at what they did. He's like, look, what we do now is like he says at one point in the audio commentary, he's like, we use guided missiles now. And there's a guy in Nevada or whatever he says. And he's like, he's flying a missile with a joystick and basically doing what guys like main character of the movie, Dick Best, did. They flew these bombers and they would dive bomb down, and it's coming in at an 80 degree angle. Meanwhile, they're being shot at, and it was watching these scenes. It's amazing. This is one of those things that when you see it in a movie, you're like, well, they're probably just glorifying it for the movie. This is what these guys did. This is how they had to fly these planes to have these bombs land with any accuracy. So the first dive bomb of the movie was at 37:17, and it's really cool. It's Ed Skeeran's character, Dick Best. He dive bombs down at a Japanese airbase. And like I said, this is the first time in the movie you see this, and you're like, oh, wow. I mean, he's just diving down, and the sounds all around, and the sounds of the plane. It's incredible. And he even talks about it. Well, I say he, Roland Emmerich, in the commentary talks about, okay, here's our first dive bomb, and it's not as elaborate. They get more elaborate as we go on, but it's really cool. And then the second dive bombing scene comes at 1 hour, 34 minutes, and 54 seconds. Roland Emmerich says in the commentary it's his favorite dive bombing scene, just because of the scope of it. And I thought that was really cool hearing that, you know, him saying, this is my favorite one. My favorite one is actually the next dive bombing scene, and that comes at like 3 minutes later. It comes at 1 hour, 37 minutes, and 50 seconds, and it's when Dick Best dives down on the Akagi aircraft carrier. The one before that Roland Emmerich's favorite scene, is when Luke Evans' character, Wade McCluskey, his squadron dives down, and as they say in the commentary, it's like McCluskey wasn't as familiar with dive bombing, so that they all went down together, and it's a pretty, I don't want to say complicated, but there's a bunch of bombers diving at once, which usually isn't the way they do it. So this scene was very elaborate, and it's just a lot of fun to see. But the next scene, the one that my favorite one that I was saying, where Dick Best dives down on the Akagi, that's the one I feel, this is my favorite scene from the movie. So I watched this whole movie and then went back and watched the audio commentary. And as soon as the movie ended, I was like, I knew what my favorite scene was, and this is it. And the intensity of them diving down in this scene, they're diving down, but they're also being chased. And it's the first time, I didn't even notice that was the first time in the movie, but they said, Roland Emmerich said that that's unusual that you're being chased at the same time, because you're also being shot at by the ship that you're trying to dive bomb to. So you've got gunfire coming from above and below, explosions going off all around you, planes exploding in front of you because he's diving with his wingmen, and other planes are exploding. So he's got to avoid those, all while trying to stay on target. Speaking of stay on target, this entire movie, all of these scenes, they make the trench run from Star Wars look like a joke. This happened in real life. This isn't space fantasy. This is real life. These guys did this. I mean, there's one part in this scene where his co-pilot, his gunner, almost falls out of the plane because they have to keep their cockpits open. And they get into that in one of the extras. They're like, they explain how dive bombing is. And it's like they start at 20,000 feet. And then dive down, and they go from really cold weather, cold air, down to really warm air. And if they kept their cockpits closed, they'd fog up. So as soon as they start to dive, and you see it a few times in the movie, as soon as they start to dive, they have to open. They're like, all right, here we go. We're going down. And they open up the cockpits, which is insane. But then they start, so they're up at about 20,000 feet. And they do a hard bank down, and they come in at an 80 degree angle, and try to aim for the ship. And like I said, in this one scene, they're also being chased and shot at. And then, of course, you know, they have to pull up at the last second. And on this one particular scene, Roland Emmerich even says, he did call this scene dive bombing at its finest. That was one quote in the audio commentary for this one particular scene. But he did admit on this scene that he did overdo it for cinematic purposes. But the only thing I can imagine that he overdid was maybe the pull up, because they pull up at the last minute, and for cinematic purposes, maybe he says they made him pull up a little too late. But for footage, to figure out how to shoot these scenes, they used footage from witness cameras that were in the actual planes. So the actual planes, when they bombed, they had quote unquote witness cameras. That's what he said in the commentary. Witness cameras in the wings of the actual planes, and they watched that footage to figure out how are we going to shoot this? What does it look like to dive bomb? So then the final dive bomb scene comes at 1 hour, 52 minutes, and 2 seconds. And this, like the other ones, it's all of these scenes are reference scenes. It's like I said, get close to your TV, get that 45 degree field of view, crank up the sound to reference level, and just enjoy. Because any one of these scenes makes the trench run from Star Wars look ridiculous. It really does. It makes it look rudimentary, because there's so much going on in these scenes. This final one, Roland Emmerich said he was really proud of this one particular sequence. He said a lot of pilots died in this dive. And now that I think of it, I think this was actually the one where they were being shot at from behind. But like you've seen this movie, if you're listening to this, if you haven't seen this movie, see this movie. It's just these scenes, they're so overwhelming, and it's incredible. The movie itself is really, really good. I got a lot out of the commentary. It's watching, especially these historical movies, watching these movies is one thing. But then I got so much more out of this movie by watching and listening to the audio commentary. So Dick Best ends up with, tuberculosis, I think it is, because he ended up, because his mixture was bad on his plane. And that's a true story. And you see it in the movie. And they have him, you know, he survives, but he never flies again. And that's pretty much where they leave it. And they give you that at the end with the little write up of each character. But what you don't get, if you've never listened to the commentary, Roland Emmerich lost an uncle to that exact situation from World War II. An uncle, he says in that he never met his uncle Wolfgang, because he got the exact same medical condition that Dick Best gets. Dick Best survived. Roland Emmerich's uncle died, survived the war, but died shortly after because of a bad mixture on his plane. So this movie, it was an emotional movie for him to make. He had wanted to make this. Another thing that comes up in the commentary, he really wanted to make this movie 20 years ago. He had just signed a big deal with Sony, but Sony's Japanese owners didn't want to spend $150 million to make a movie about a battle that they lost. So they didn't allow him to make it. Well, here we are 20 years later. CGI and visual effects is far better and cheaper. So now he says, I got to make my movie because it was $50 million cheaper and they made it for $100 million. But like I said, definitely, if you haven't listened to the audio commentary, I highly recommend the audio commentary. It's as entertaining as the movie, because you learn, especially if you're a history, you know, history buff and you like this type of stuff. There's a lot that went into the making of this movie to make it historically accurate. And it was kind of amazing to think of how accurate this movie really was or is. And a lot of the nods that they tried to do to make it not as, you know, American. They wanted to show both sides and honor both sides. And I thought they did a really good job with that. Roland Emmerich even says at one point, I think it was when they were sinking, one of the Japanese ships, and the captain was standing on the deck as they were about to blow it up. And he's like, just, he shot that scene to show like how brave the Japanese people are. And they just did a lot to try to balance this out, because yes, there is, you know, one side wins and one side loses, but it is a war, and these people that gave their lives to do this, he just wanted to show respect to like every side's trying and every side, you know, every side's brave. A lot of scenes slash shots in this movie were taken directly from historical footage. So they would see the historical footage and then reenact it for the movie. One of the ones that he mentions in the commentary is seen when a plane tries to land on an aircraft carrier and skids off to the side. And they're like, he was mentioning how they tried to recreate that according to the historical footage. I mentioned earlier about how the different scenes like Hawaii, the ocean, Japan being snowy, how the contrast of all those scenes really was cool to see, you know, really sets the stage on your screen. And in the commentary, he was saying he shot those Japan scenes, the snowy scenes in Montreal. And he even says, like, I don't know if it was snowing in Japan then. Like, I don't know if it was cold at the time or if they had snow. That's not historical, but he wanted to set that stage, and he wanted that contrast from like Hawaii, from the green of Hawaii, and he wanted to show the cold of Japan so that they didn't, you know, both look the same, I guess. But yeah, he wanted to set that stage, which I thought was pretty cool. That's, you know, you don't think of that when you're watching the movie. You just take it for granted, but it was pretty cool. And getting into the extras, watched every single one of the extras. I recommend watching all of them. Some are shorter than others, but they're definitely worth your time. My favorite one is Turning Point, The Legacy of Midway. It's about 15 minutes long, and it's basically just a historical analysis of the entire battle. And it is actually very emotional. Just listening to, I mean, it's tough to get through, hearing what these people went through, and it's really, really cool. My second favorite one was Getting It Right, which is, I think it's the first one that comes up. It's, Getting It Right, The Making of Midway. And it basically, it's them trying to tell, you know, show you how they tried to make it historically accurate. And my third favorite one is the Joe Rockfort Breaking the Japanese Code. It's about 5-6 minutes long. And it's kind of what this whole movie is about, is the code breaking. And it goes into how they broke the Japanese code and were able to basically set this whole battle up. Because if they don't break this code, if they don't intercept this information, they don't know that Midway is coming. So this extra is actually, it's like an additional piece of Getting It Right, the Getting It Right extra. But it really deserves its own, because without this, it's, you know, you don't even know this is happening, and then Midway just gets attacked and they lose, and we're probably, as they say in the movie, we're probably all speaking Japanese now. But then there's the Men of Midway, which is just them, how they cast these people. And if you watch this one, plus watch the end of the movie just before the credits, and they go through and they give you the little cards of, they show you the actor, and then they'll fade, and then they bring up the real character. Or not the character, the real person that they're playing. And some of these people, especially James Doolittle, Aaron Eckhart looks just like him. It's a small role in the movie. If you want more on the whole James Doolittle thing, watch Pearl Harbor. That's the Pearl Harbor movie, starts at Pearl Harbor, and then they go into the whole James Doolittle scenario, which is pretty historical in itself. But that's in the movie. Aaron Eckhart looks just, when they go from, they fade Aaron Eckhart and then they go to the black and white photo of James Doolittle, and you're like, it could be the same guy. I thought the same thing with Admiral Halsey and Dennis Quaid. They're very, very similar. I thought it was pretty cool how they did Admiral Nimitz with Woody Harrelson. They gave him the hair and everything. It was a pretty good representation, but watching that at the end of the movie was pretty cool. So another one of the extras was Roland Emmerich, Man on a Mission. It's about 5 minutes long. That's pretty cool. But if you're going to watch and listen to the audio commentary, I recommend, if you had to pick one, I would take the 2.5 hours and watch the movie with the audio commentary, because that gets into everything that he wanted, how he wanted to make this movie, how badly he wanted to make this movie. If you don't have time for that, take the 5 minutes and watch the Roland Emmerich extra. Then the last one, grab a box of tissues, because it's getting dusty in here. We met at Midway. They take two veterans that are still alive that were at Midway, and all I'll say is it's emotional. It's about 10 minutes long. It's worth your time. No, check that. It's not worth your time. They deserve your time. And the last extra on there is the theatrical trailer, which does a really good job at giving you a glimpse at the action and the immersion that you're going to get when you see this movie. But the other thing is, the trailer's tough, because this was fun to watch. It's fun to sit in your theater and experience everything that you want out of your home theater. The explosions, the big screen action and all of that. And at the same time, I was conflicted, because I'm like, I'm having fun. But these guys did this. People are dying. And this was real life. So you're like, you're mixed. But it is. It's a fun movie to watch, but tough at the same time. That's why they're called The Greatest Generation. We're taking their life stories and using them as entertainment. And I thought Roland Emmerich did an unbelievable job with this one. Highly recommend it. I can't wait to watch it again. My son hasn't seen it, so I can't wait for him to come home. And I'm definitely, first chance we get, I want to sit down with him and watch this. So great. So much fun. Next week, I'm at it again. I'm at it again with another war, in quotations, movie. Hunt for Red October comes out in 4K on Tuesday next week. Definitely doing that one. That's one of my favorite movies from, what year did that come out? 1990? Crazy. Yeah, what's that, the 30 year anniversary of it? That's why it is coming out. So yeah, 1990 would be the year. I don't think it's getting an Atmos track, but it will be in 4K. I'm wondering if the sound is going to be any better, because that's, I mean, a submarine movie. Sound is key, so it should be fun. Really looking forward to that. We'll be doing that next week. But let me know what you thought of Midway. Let me know on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought of those scenes. Also, check out NerdyLegion.com. See if there's any other podcasts you'd like to listen to. They have a ton of podcasts over there, all different interests, from sports to comics, mostly comics. And obviously they have home theater, because we're a member of the Nerdy Legion, so check that out. And also, on iTunes, if you could, please rate, review, and subscribe. Nice 5-star review would be great. Really appreciate it. And if there's anything else you want, if there's something you want added to the podcast, let me know on Twitter. That'd be great too. All right, that's it for this week. Hope everybody has a great weekend. I will see you next Friday with Hunt for Red October. That's what I'll be pushing play on. Let me know what you're pushing play on. See you then. Now go push play. Hey, Fred. This has been a Hey, Fred production, with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.